This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One. Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from KCBX Studios. Right now we're with Wendy Vorsanger, who's a Cal Poly grad and the author of an awesome novel, Prospects of a Woman. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. As I told you in an email, your book was a game changer for my life experience and study of California history. And the reason why is through the eyes of a woman. As we both know, it was approximately 5% of the population in the Sierras were female, 8% in San Francisco. So by default, 98% of California history was written by men. It was an unconscious bias. All of a sudden, you come along and you show me the gold rush through the eyes of a woman. I love it. It really was an epiphanous moment for me, and you got me.
Ah, thank you so much. I'm really happy you enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. My first question is, why and how did this all start? Was it a vision? Was it an epiphanous moment for you?
Well, I'm very interested in California history. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised on the American River, and when my kids were young, I would bring them up to the North Fork and kind of just get their energy out and play around, or I would take them up to the Yuba, and I spent a lot of time on Highway 49, taking them to the little towns, going to the museums or into the mines. And I started thinking a lot about who the people were that lived in these areas. And then when they got a little bit older, my boys in fourth grade, they have to learn about the gold rush.
Right.
And women are absent from that narrative in our California school curriculum. And I was very surprised by that because I knew there were women here. And I went about trying to understand who those women were and what they were doing and what their lives were like. And I was very surprised at everything that I learned, because I realized growing up in California, I really didn't learn anything about the women of early California.
So you decided to change the rules of the game. Your protagonist is Elizabeth. How did you come up with her? And is she a prior incarnation of you?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. I don't think I'm as brave as her. Well, I did a lot of research about women in early California, and it was very easy to sort of create her because there were so many different women who were actual women.
So most of the women in the book are modeled after real characters?
Yes, all of them. All of them actually are real characters. Some of them I actually changed their name. She's an amalgam of four different characters, four different actual real people. I started to do the research, and I was like, wow, these women are really incredible. Like, for instance, Frances Gearhart, she was a woodcut maker and a printer. And Ina Kohlberth, she was an early California poet. You know, it was very easy for me to learn about these women and learn about their extraordinary contributions and their personalities and what made them different than women in the rest of the country. And once I understood, wow, these women were not the same type of women that were in the rest of the country, then I started to dig deeper. What was giving the women this agency? And then I learned about the laws of California and the rights that women were getting.
Oh, that was an epiphanous moment. I did not realize what a game changer California was when they had their statehood. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is really fascinating. And this is something I really wish California school kids would learn. In 1849, when the California Constitutional Convention happened, there were six California men there. And those were men that were very powerful, part of the land-owning, ranching families in California. And they basically insisted, they had a seat at the table, and they insisted that women actually had property rights and that they would put that into the Constitution. Property rights and rights to make contracts. Property rights separate from their husbands or their fathers.
What an anomaly.
Yeah. And that was happening nowhere else in the country. And the reason why, there are a couple of reasons for that. So in California, our law comes from Spain. It comes from, you know, the civil law. It doesn't come from, you know, English common law. People don't know that. So the American immigrants that were sitting around the table basically agreed to it for one reason. They said, okay, we'll stick that in our constitution because we want the women to come. So that'll get them here. That'll be the big magnet. That instantly was embedded into the constitution. And then right after that, once we became a state, all the counties started allowing women to get divorced and to keep custody of their children.
Wow. What a disconnect at that time and place in America.
Right. But yeah. It set the foundation for the way women were treated, number mm-hmm. one, and also how they viewed themselves. Because all of a sudden, they landed in this place, and they could stay with their husband or not. If they owned property, they could own it separately from their husband. It gave them an agency and sort of a power mm-hmm. that allowed them to help build California.
The other dynamic that I was smitten with in your book was you managed to make it timeless. You gave it, in a sense, a contemporary lens. For example, Elizabeth's husband turns out to be a homosexual. You know, that's stuff that, for the most part, was not talked about, but you reveal that. And lesbian issues, you know, a lot of those dynamics that you know happened, but yet we don't read about in California history.
Right. So that's another sort of narrative that's missing from mm-hmm. what we're taught in schools and in sort of films and early, you know, pulp fiction of California. And when I started doing my research, I realized that especially in the southern mines down by like Sonora, mm-hmm. that was a much more raucous area, kind of wild area, lawless area. And there were groups of men down there that were able to sort of live more honestly. And I believe that that set the foundation for sort of the freedom that many gay people have in California now.
Oh, wow. But it's an untold legacy.
Yeah, there are some academic books actually that have come out in the last, you know, 20 years or 15 years mm-hmm. that do sort of explore that. And I saw many photos and illustrations that inspired a couple of scenes from my book, which were very surprising to me. Like, I didn't understand, oh, these men were dancing with each other. Mm-hmm. They were being with each other. They were pretending. They were taking on roles, mm-hmm. right? I didn't understand, oh, how come I don't know about this?
But even, like, in Australia, it was so man-centric that that's where the term mate that is still used in Australia.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. And interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
The other dynamic that I was really smitten by had to do with the Mexicans, Californians
yeah.
that lived here and how they were so screwed over.
Yeah.
And the rancho down by Gilroy. What was that modeled on? How closely on reality?
San Juan Bautista.
Where in your book.
Right.
Where, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I.
The hacienda where she
right,
goes to.
Right. So interestingly, I have a close friend who has a little place on the North Fork of the American, and he also has a place. So in the very beginning of the book, where the book takes place in the beginning and the end of the book, where it takes place
right.
down in that region down by San Juan Bautista, he also has a house down there. So it's geographically, it's exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Story-wise, contextually.
Yeah. I mean, for me, that whole area, the Galvalian Mountains mm-hmm. range, it's so rich and beautiful. And the mission down there is just extraordinary. Have you been down there to the mission?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's so...
And actually, fourth or fifth grade when you do California yeah. history, that's where we went
oh, really?
On our bus field trip.
Right, yeah. right. Yeah, so to me, I really wanted to tie those two areas of California together. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the Californios being screwed over, yes, right? So that's another thing that we don't learn about in California education about our history is that the Spaniards that came here oppressed the Native Americans, right? Then you have the Mexican-Spanish War, the Mexicans now take over, and then the Americans come in and we systematically go about removing their ranches from them. Mm-hmm. And many women married into ranches, many men married into the ranches, American.
To get rights.
To get, yeah, give me some of that yeah. money, right? So I felt like that was an important narrative in my novel to explore that I have not read in other narratives or fiction.
We're talking with Wendy Vorsanger, the author of Prospects of a Woman, a novel about the Gold Rush era in California. Tell us more, Wendy.
Well, what can I tell you? So I get a lot of questions about the sex in mm-hmm. my book. I can
yeah.
tell you, we can talk a little bit about that. So,
I know, and I was wondering, is there some modeling after you? Because it's very contemporary and very timeless. And again, that was one of the beauties of your book. You erased the time distance.
Right, right. I appreciate you saying that. I wanted to make the history of California women accessible. And I also feel that from personal experience, you know, I have a lot of women in my family going back many, many generations that to me always seemed very confident and very comfortable with their body. I do feel like that felt different for me from other women that I've met in other parts of the country. So I wanted to explore that. And I felt like from what I researched, that was a very authentic narrative for women in California.
So you found some primary source material.
Yeah, and I have to say
So they were diaries or what did
yes,
you?
Yes, yeah. And the most interesting diaries for me, by the way, were from the men. And actually not diaries, I don't want to say. They weren't diaries. Letters or men, I found up in the gold country, I would find sort of records, right, of men. Men would say, okay, this was the weather today. This is how much gold I had. And my wife came and threw the lamp against the curtains and my cabin burned down and I can't get her back. What I found most interesting was the narrative from the men because that illuminated a lot. And not that they were really emoting in these sort of journal type accounts, but they would talk about the frustration that they couldn't keep her. She won't stay here. Why won't she stay here? She's always leaving. Or now I hear she wants, you know, this guy down the road who has a bigger claim, or she wants to open something up in town. Or now I hear she's baking bread, you know, over the hill. And that was the most illuminating to me, I think.
That's one of the dynamics of this gold rush that's so amazing, is how much people earned per hour to iron clothes or to bake bread.
Right.
Yeah. And you have your bread baker in your book.
Yeah, and I would love to talk a little bit about that woman. I don't know. Do you know anything about her?
No, I don't.
Okay, so let me tell you. So I have a character in my book named Nandy Gooch, and her real name is Nancy Gooch. And she came here in 1850 with her slave owner from Missouri. So it's almost a actual narrative of her life. So when we became a state in 1850, he was run out of the town of Coloma on the American because you had to work for yourself. You couldn't actually own people in California. And she stayed with her husband and they were free. So they started doing all kinds of domestic work. They cooked, they did laundry. They started saving up their money, diligently saving up their money, and they started buying land. And they ended up paying for her son's freedom in Missouri and his wife, and they came out to Coloma. She ended up becoming one of the largest landowners on the river. Not the largest African-American landowner, but the largest landowner.
Of everybody.
Yes.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah, and her family and her descendants are buried in Coloma.
Wow. Living descendants?
I don't know, actually. Oh. I'm sure there are. Yeah. I'm sure there are. But, you know, she's a woman of color, yet she still had agency and power, not just that she wouldn't have had in the South, but she wouldn't have had as a white woman in, you know, Missouri or Kentucky or wherever. And I found that really, she must have been an extraordinary woman, but California gave her that strength.
Think of another game-changing character that you bumped into that you went, wow. I mean, this Gooch is incredible.
Right, right, right. She was pretty incredible. Let me think. So I'm blanking right now because they're all so amazing. So Juana Briones was amazing. I don't know. Do you know anything about her? So
nope.
She's also modeled in my book.
You know, this is another book.
I know.
No,
you mean all these women? You mean the real women?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. That's a no-brainer, man. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm trying to chronicle these women online. It's She Is California. I'd like to get more women up there, but there's maybe, I have like maybe 50 women. So
Where do you go to?
SheIsCalifornia.com. Okay. So my idea is to kind of get a chronicle of all of these women, not just the women who were doing extraordinary things, but the women who did sort of minor things to sort of help build California. But anyway, so Juana Briones is really a fascinating character. She is the California woman in my novel, Gabriela Sanchez. So I basically just took Juana's life and threw her in there and gave her a different name. So she was a California woman who was living in San Francisco, sort of at the base of Telegraph Hill. And when California allowed divorce in San Francisco, she divorced her husband. He was quite abusive. They had a small rancho, and she did a lot of like healing of American sailors when they sort of came in on their ships. And she had 7 children. So she ended up leaving that area and buying a huge ranch down in Los Altos area. Mm-hmm. She ended up becoming one of the largest landowners down there, rancher, woman, single mom, 7 kids, like really quite an amazing woman.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, she came from the Northeast.
Yes.
What was the modeling there?
Well, I felt in order to tell the story of California women, or women who came to California and became California women, I really wanted to have sort of a mirror of what were women doing on the East Coast. And so my character comes from Concord, Massachusetts.
Based on a real person, or was it kind of composite?
It was a composite, mm-hmm. But in my novel, her childhood friend is the real Louisa May Alcott. So I was able to take that real woman who was living on the East and had, for her time, a great deal of agency and power in terms of, she was the breadwinner for her family. She wrote and was able to support both of her parents and her siblings, and sort of compare, well, what would a woman like that be versus a woman on the West Coast? And so in my novel, my character writes Louisa May Alcott letters. And in those letters, it's in first person that you're able to sort of see how they interact with each other. And to me, that was an important part of the mm-hmm. book.
And it is. It's kind of like a little aside. You're reading your novel, and then all of a sudden, you're reading her letter to Louisa May.
Right. And also what I did is, when I wrote the letters, I did a lot of research about Louisa May and her life and her family and sort of how she felt as a woman trying to become independent on the East Coast. And it was very, very difficult at the time. And in the letters, also, Elizabeth has a different kind of way of interacting with her girlfriend on the East Coast. She tries to really put on her East Coast self, if you will, in her letters.
Right. Yeah, you could tell the whole shift in word usage.
Yeah. She kind of tries to up her game a little bit.
Right.
Things are a little scrappier out here in California. It's kind of like that now. I have some East Coast friends, and I'm always like, oh gosh, I need to like be a little fancier.
Definitely. I had a friend who was a psychologist at Cal Poly, and he finally gave up and went back east.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he could not adjust.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I don't think I could live back east. What about you?
No, I'm too spoiled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, the other thing, your book has all of the requisite ingredients that Hollywood looks for. Every single one. Are you under contract yet for
not
a movie?
Not yet.
Are you working on that?
You know, it's interesting. I have some people who've reached out to me, but nothing is kind of spinning yet.
It is such a visual, dynamic story that you tell. It's just, it's begging to be a visual story
in
movie form.
I mean, to me it is too. I feel, so have you watched this new show on HBO called Warrior? Or actually, I don't know if it's on HBO, but HBO just picked up the third season. It's called Warrior. Do you know the show?
I think snippets. My wife is a TV watcher and I come in and out.
Okay, I got to tell you about the show.
Okay.
So this show is the first show I've ever seen about early California that gets women right. And it's interesting because it's...
What time period does it take place?
It's the 70s, 1870. Okay. It's set during the Tong Wars in San Francisco. And it's really amazing because it's Bruce Lee's daughter is the producer. And it's all Chinese, California, American writers, producers, everything.
Very cool.
But they get all of the Caucasian women perfect.
Wow.
Yeah. So I would love to work with those people. Yeah.
The other thing that you touch on thematically in your book are the Native Americans.
Briefly, right, briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually had a sensitivity reader work with me on that. There's hardly any Native California women who've been able to get their story told in a book. And so this isn't that story, but I do, to me it was very important to show that there were... If you talk about California women, you have to talk about Native California women and sort of what their plight was. And so I touch on that briefly. Yeah, Nisian was the tribe. But I was very careful, and I did work with a sensitivity reader, which was fascinating because she wasn't a Native American, right? That would have been the most perfect thing to do. But she tried to sort of help me navigate any hot buttons where I would have maybe portrayed it in an insensitive way.
Well, it definitely worked.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So do you know anybody in Hollywood?
I was just thinking about that.
I think also women want to see women in history with agency.
But you have such a dramatic story, such a visual story. I mean, your scene at the Rancho with the dancing.
And, yeah.
I mean, it's just, wow.
Oh, thank you,
you can
so much.
Hear it, see it. Yeah. You totally got me.
Oh, I'm so glad.
It took me a couple of pages, and all of a sudden, I couldn't put it down. It's one of those where, you know, I'll stay up and read till midnight.
Oh, I love it.
So, honored to share your book with my friends. This, the book you sent me, I'm going to leave with Marisa.
Oh, that's so great.
Very cool. So how have you been showcasing your book? Do you do book talks and go around?
Yeah, you know, so because of COVID, my publisher put the book out in October, right? And because of COVID, I've been super isolated, right? In California, it's been not very safe to be around. So I haven't been in any bookstores.
Uh-huh. So most, you've been doing Zoom?
Yeah, it's all been Zoom, which has been fascinating, really interesting, because I do a lot of book clubs. I love doing book clubs. I have a presentation that I do on Zoom, which shows a lot of the visual inspiration for the novel, and people seem to really like that. And then I've done a lot of radio and podcasts and weird Instagram Live, Facebook Live, you know, doing a lot of that stuff. So I'm mostly just trying to appreciate the fact that the book is actually out in the world. And
Where does Wendy go from here?
Oh, well, so I do about 2 or 3 book clubs a week, and I'm hearing that people want a sequel.
Yeah, have you started it yet?
Do you want a sequel too? Really? Why? Tell
me
why.
Because you left me hanging.
I left you hanging. Yeah. My mother-in-law too, she's really bummed about the, you know, she's like, what? Anyway, so I don't know. I'm exploring around, you know, that topic. And
well, the alternate that I wanted to push you would be the women biographies in a collection of California. I think that's a brilliant one.
Yeah. Do you think people would be interested in that?
Oh, are you kidding? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Guaranteed. Yeah. Guaranteed.
Okay. Well, that's really good input. So I'm also really interested in sort of the artist colonies in the 20s. Mm-hmm. You know, there were a lot of artist colonies.
There was one near Oceano.
One near Carmel, by Big Sur. And then right there in San Francisco. So in my family, there were a couple of women artists that would, you know, leave their kids at home, take off in the afternoon, go to their studio, quote unquote studio. Mm-hmm. So I'm very fascinated with that.
And that's how Carmel Art Colony started, was from the San Francisco earthquake.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah. So I'm fascinated with that and sort of what the women were doing, what they were creating, what they were leaving, what they were sacrificing. Right. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing a lot of research around that, but then I'm hearing, sequel. So I'm not sure.
Too parallel.
Yeah.
You do mental cleanser, jump over to
mental cleansers. What are mental? Yeah, maybe. You got to tell me what your mental cleansers are.
Well, you're going to be working on Prospects of a Woman Part 2.
Yeah.
Then when you go cross-eyed, then you jump over to women in California
history. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But my boys are like, you need a Prospects of Men. And I'm like, I don't really think we need that.
No. There's been way too much of that.
Yeah. I just want to say one thing about men in California. I think that because of how women were given power and agency in early California, that's been challenging for men, right? And I think men have had to up their game. And I do think the men in California actually, as a result, are very special, patient, tolerant, open in ways that maybe they aren't in other states.
Wendy, if somebody wanted to learn more about you and your novel, Prospects of a Woman, a novel, where would you direct them?
So first, my website, which is just my name, wendyvorsinger.com or .net. Wendy with a Y, not an I. That would be too cute. Vorsanger, V as in Victor, Vorsanger.net or com. And I love to do book clubs. So if anybody does a book club, I would love to join via Zoom because there's so much to talk about and I have some great historical material to share. So that would be the first place to go. You can reach me through my website. And then also, if you want to learn more about California women, sheiscalifornia.com is a good spot to go. And yeah.
I love it. I'm so glad that you came to the studio and it was so an honor to meet you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure. It was great. It was a great conversation. I'm really happy to have been here.
We've been speaking with Wendy Vorsinger, the author of Prospects of a Woman, a novel. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter, down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolff, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust preservation initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
Well, I'll be turning 33 next Friday morning. Friday morning 15 years ago, my grandfather called me to his bedside, and he told me there was something I should know. He said, don't stray too far from the land, boy. The land will one day set you free. When the cities all are dying, the folks up there are crying, the land will save you, wait and see. So I loaded up my car and moved to Denver to work a job and chase big city dreams. But I never found the life I really wanted till I came back home to Leaper's Fork, Tennessee. He said, don't stray too far from the land, boy. The land will one day set you free. When the cities all are dying, the folks up there are crying, the land will save you, wait and see. It didn't hit me quite as hard then as those words come through today. But in the chaos all around me, I can still hear Grandpa say, don't stray too far from the land, boy. The land will one day set you free. When the cities all are dying, the folks up there are crying, the land will save you, wait and see.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.